For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome, everyone. This week is the Haftorah for Parshas Emor, page 1176.
Thank you, Dina.
So this is from Yechezkel, Ezekiel, and he's always a future prophet. He's always talking about the third Beis Hamikdash, Mashiach's time. So it's always interesting. Some prophets talk about events in the past. A lot of these prophecies deal with the future. The idea of a Kohen, so the Torah actually describes all of us as Kohanim. Kohanim means somebody that gets to serve Hashem in a more intense kind of service, a more close kind of service. And initially, everybody was able to go up to the Beis HaMikdosh, and the firstborn of each family would represent the family in the service. But when at the sin of the golden calf, so we limited it to only the Kohanim and the Leviim. But the Yisraelim would go up and be like the cheering squad for the Kohanim when the Kohanim brought the offerings for everybody. And there's an idea that when the Mashiach comes, that maybe the firstborn will get it back, because a lot of things will be fixed. There'll be a new era. And but here it describes the Kohanim. It begins like this: HaKohanim v'HaLevim. And this is interesting also, because usually, even though all Kohanim are from the tribe of Levi, they're two separate jobs. You're either a Kohen or you're a Levi. You're not a Kohen Levi, right? So here it describes the Kohanim HaLevim. One of the things that happened in the second Beis HaMikdash was the Levim didn't come back in large numbers. In other words, only a small percentage of the Jewish people came back at the second Beis HaMikdash. And for whatever reason, there were not a lot of Levim amongst them. Therefore, they had to make a special measure, some people say it was like a penalty, where the Kohanim would accept the part that goes to a Levi. There were certain parts of the offerings that would go to the Levi, of the Trumas and Maisras. And usually you would, even though every Kohen is also a Levi, you would find somebody who's only a Levi. There's the idea that every job is distinct.
Was it because you think they were more scattered? They had their cities all over the place?
I don't know why they didn't come back. Even to this day, they're not. You would think there would be many more Levim than Kohanim, because Levi was the whole tribe, and Aaron, the Kohanim, are one family. But actually, they're pretty equal, the Kohanim and Levim today. Doesn't seem to be as many of them. But he's describing the future, the Kohanim and Levim together, B'nai Tzadok. Now, there were different families of the Kohanim. Some of the Kohanim were convinced to work in places where things that were going on were not so good, places where they worshipped idols or they did other things. They were attractive. You could get good jobs in those temples to the idols and to the Jews that weren't worshipping Hashem correctly. But the family of Tzadok always stayed loyal to Hashem. So what he's saying here is the loyal family that stuck with Hashem for, you know, it didn't sell their soul. In my younger years, as a rabbi, you always knew that if you wanted to take a conservative pulpit, you could make more money if you were willing to sell your soul. And those days they used to take, you know, Orthodox rabbis for conservative. That was a way to, and they would say to themselves, oh, I could reach more people and I'll make them more traditional. But basically they weren't being loyal to their, and I knew a lot of people.
Conservative was more traditional years ago than it is
now. That's correct, yeah. The one family of the Kohanim that stayed loyal were the descendants of Tzadok. And that part of the messianic times, there's no question that loyalty is what counts in Hashem's book. People that stay, you know, that stayed with Hashem and that didn't go to the temples of the idols and of strange gods. So the Kohanim, Levim, Bnei Tzedek, Kasher Shomeres Mishmeres, they guarded the guarding. They kept up the part of the job of the Kohanim is to protect or to keep the people safe. In the blessing that the Kohanim bless the people, they protect them physically and they protect them spiritually. And if somebody killed somebody by mistake, we blame the Kohen Gadol. There's a concept that the Kohen Gadol, the people that have to run to the cities of refuge, have to go there until the death of the Kohen Gadol. So the question is, what does the Kohen Gadol have to do with somebody killing people? Hello. So there's an idea that the Kohen is, if people are reckless, if they're drunk driving, if the, in those days, if you swung the hatchet without looking behind you or without making sure it was tightened on, and so they had work accidents where the hatchet would, you know, your guy's swinging away in the field and he's too close to someone and they would get injured. Or so they had to run to the city of refuge until the death of the Kohen Gadol, because if they valued life, they would be more careful. When a person is willing to take risks on other people, it's because life isn't important enough. But the Kohen Gadol, it's his responsibility to that people should value life and see the image of Hashem in life, and he should pray for life. So they were responsible for the safety of the society, and they were also responsible for the spiritual part. So anyway, they were guard the guardings. Ubatanus bnei Yisrael me'olai, and there were people that strayed. Hei yakrivu, they are the ones that are going to serve me, l'sharseni, and do my service. V'amdu l'fanai, and they get to stand in front of me, l'hakrivli, and to bring for me chei levidam, the fat and the blood and the offerings. Num Hashem. And it's interesting also that when you say that you bring the fat and the blood, basically what you're saying is the people keep the entire animal. When you bring, let's say, a peace offering, you get to keep all the meat that's edible, pretty much. All the steaks are yours. You know, you give the Kohen a little bit of fat. You know, you give the, you know, it's not a, Shem doesn't ask from us that much. In other words, a small amount would go on the altar and on the Mizbeach. And today we don't even use those fats. I don't know what you would do with a piece of fat. They make schmaltz out of it. But no, we're not, there's forbidden fats that would go on the Mizbeach. And the rest is what we use. And verse 16, Hema Yavu El Mekachi, they were the ones, this loyal family of the Kohanim who led the people through thick and thin, and they are the ones who are going to come to my Beis HaMikdash, Hema Yakrivu El, and they'll serve me to my table, L'Shersteini, to serve me, V'Shamres Mishmarti, and they'll continue to guard the guardings. There's the idea of guarding or protecting if we're not careful, our service of Hashem can just like fall to the wayside. And sometimes we have to protect ourselves. We have to do things to make sure that we don't get our Yiddishkeit, so to speak, doesn't get harmed. Our things that we've accomplished that needs to be guarded. 17. And when they come to my courtyard, he describes their clothing. Now it's interesting. In the Beis HaMikdash that we know of, the Kohanim wore woolen linen, which is shatness, which is fascinating in of itself. Normally we keep those two things separate, but when the Kohen goes into the Beis HaMikdash, there's an idea that there are often people that don't mix. There are some people that are wool people. They're the animal people. They're shepherds. They were sheep. And then there's other people that are farmers. They're into the flax. And those are two different kinds of people, two different kinds of jobs. And sometimes they have different outlooks on life. And you put them together, they're going to fight. They're going to not get along. They're better off. You don't mix the wool and linen. But in the service of Hashem, everybody has to get along. Everybody gets together. We can get along with people of different ways of thinking and different ideas. As long as they're on the same team, we want them. We're fine in the Beis HaMikdash. We bring the shatness into the Beis HaMikdash. With the Kohanim, they wore woolen linen in their clothing. But he describes here in the future some kind of change. Now, this is strange because we don't believe things change in the future. And when they first received the book of Yechezkel, there were those that said, there's something wrong here. This is confusing. Maybe we shouldn't include this in the holy books, because they had certain things that he says there that are unusual. And what happened was they knew that he spoke in the name of Hashem. He had proven himself. He was a true prophet. And so they started a school to study the book to explain the contradictions. They convinced those people that that it was, everything was in the name of Hashem and it could be accepted.
When was this?
This would have been, it's mentioned in the Gemara at least 2,000 years ago. Would have been even before that. I want to say at the Second Temple period, or no, it would have been at the end of the First. I'm not sure.
That was the Sanhedrin that did that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or I guess it would have been the Sanhedrin. Yeah. But today we don't know exactly how they explained everything. There are a few different approaches. One approach is that he's talking about Yom Kippur over here, when he talks about the white garments. And he's just referencing a certain time of year, not the regular service. The question is if the garments of the Kohanim will change. There's also, let's keep on going, and you'll see some differences between this and what the Torah mentions for Kohanim. So if the first question is the clothing. It says 17, when they come to the courtyard, they wear the flax. They won't wear the wool. So does this mean they'll change, or does this mean it'll be like a Yom Kippur service, all white? You know, when the Messianic times will be so pure, we'll be like angels, like Yom Kippur. Peri pishim yu al rishom, they'll wear the flax and the clothing of flax. Velo yichagru baza, and they won't gird themselves with a certain kind of belt. Verse 19, when they go out to the people, yifshitu es bigdeihem asher hamil, they only wore this clothing in front of Hashem. And it is an interesting idea that when we stand in front of Hashem, we're different than when we stand out to the outside world. In other words, that's a very private space. When we go and daven to Hashem, we're wearing different clothing. We put ourselves in a different world than we are to the outside. We humble ourselves. We have a whole different dimension in our relationship with Hashem. We wear different clothing, and then when we go out, we go back to we put on different clothing. Aveinicho osam belishus hakodesh, and they left it in a certain room. Veloshu begadim acherim. Velo yekdishu es ha'am begdeyam, and they didn't wear these clothing when they were amongst the people. Verse 20. Veroshem lo yigalechu. And they didn't cut their hair.
Maybe not cut it too much or too little. Just keep it neat and trimmed.
They did have to keep it neat and trimmed. Yeah, I'm wondering if it's saying that. I guess that's what it's saying. The Kohanim, they represented themselves in front of Hashem, so they couldn't have like long hair, and it couldn't be too short either. It had to be like just right. It had to, that when you stand in front of Hashem, you need to make a good appearance. You need to be exactly well groomed. And that's symbolic of the inside has to be that way too. In other words, well groomed. Veroshim and their head logia, they shouldn't cut it, but on the other hand, it shouldn't be too long either. Because of Shoshayim. The Gemara mentions that the Kohen Gadol had a special haircut, that he was like the most groomed, that he had like his hair, every hair was in place. It was like a unique, and he had to be somebody that looked respectable. He had to stand out and be, it was a certain presence that he had to have, and the clothing he wore were definitely very valuable and different. It was almost like a king to some extent, the way the Kohen Gadol looked. Yeah.
How was it determined who would be the Kohen Gadol?
The fellow Kohanim would figure it out. The Kohanim themselves, amongst the tribe of the Kohanim. Now it would normally be hereditary, depending if there was a direct descendant of the previous one.
But not in the Second Temple.
Not in the Second Temple, right? That's correct.
Good.
Yeah. V'yayin lo yishtu. And when they go into the Beis HaMikdash, they're not allowed to drink wine. That would be an artificial stimulus. When you serve Hashem, it has to be natural, and also it has to be with reverence. If you drink too much wine, that's no good. Kohen, any kind of oil machatzer. In fact, we have an interesting custom. Simchas Torah, there's an ancient custom to drink. I don't know why, that's the way they, in the shul they have people that bring whiskey into shul on Simchas Torah. So the Kohanim have a custom to do Birkas Kohanim in the morning, early, rather than towards the afternoon, because the rule is that the service where they bless the people is like a temple service. Your Kohen isn't allowed to drink. So if they'd wait till Musaf, where the Kohanim might have drunk something, that would be a sin. So therefore, hopefully people don't drink right away when they wake up in the morning. You gotta be really, most people, they at least wait till after breakfast till they start, right? So the first thing early, in the early service, they have the Kohanim bless the people. That's, if you come to shul late on Simchas Torah, you miss the blessing. That's where the custom, comes from, because when you do a service of Hashem, a person is supposed to be sober, is not supposed to have drunk something. So he mentions this halacha over here to remind the Kohanim, that the service of Hashem is not with the drinking. Now he mentions over here, this is where it's a little confusing, because he doesn't mention he's talking about the Kohen Gadol. It sounds like, in fact, we started off with regular Kohanim, and he seems to the Kohen Gadol had to marry only for the first time. He couldn't marry someone that had been married before, whether a regular Kohen is allowed to marry a widow. And yet this sounds like the halacha of the Kohen Gadol. There is a view that in the future, even the regular Kohanim will take on some of the stringencies of the Kohen Gadol. But he says the following, Va'almana v'grusha lo yikachu. And a widow or a divorced woman, the Kohen or the Kohen Gadol cannot marry. Lanashim ki'im besula mizera beis Yisrael. The only one he can marry is an unmarried regular, somebody from the house of Israel. But then he mentions something we don't have in the Torah. He says a widow from another Kohen he could take. We don't have any rule like that today. In other words, if a Kohen today wants to marry a widow, he doesn't have to marry the widow of another Kohen. He can just marry a widow, you know. So what would the reason be? Why would this be so? They had very difficult cooking challenges there, because the Kohanim in Eretz Yisrael, they ate in purity. And that meant that the food could not come in contact with certain kinds of creeping creatures and things that died. It meant that certain times of the month, food could not be touched and had to be kept separate and holy and purified. We have Milchix Fleishix and Pesach. They also would have had separate equipment for Truma and Kachim. The holier the food was, the more careful that it had to be kept. Some food had to be eaten by a certain time, and then if it wasn't eaten, it had to be burnt. And if somebody passed over a cemetery or had been in a hospital and was impure, they couldn't eat some of the food, or certain members of the household. The Kohanim had to watch their kids that they not play in the dirt, because if you played in the dirt, then you touched the creepies, and then they couldn't eat certain foods for supper. And it was really complicated to be a Kohen in those times. The Mishnayos talk about it. So a wife of a Kohen, once you learn how to do it, it's not hard. You just get used to it. You know, we meet people today that never kept kosher, their mother never kept kosher, and it's like, it's so hard for them. They can't even imagine. How do you remember to keep the milk over here and the meat over here? And how do you do it? Well, if you grew up that way and you're used to it, it's like nothing, because you've always done it. But if you, so what they were saying over here is that a Kohen should marry a widow because she's not used to running a household with Truma and Meiser and Kachim and little Kohanim, and it's gonna be too hard for her. You should only stick to, if she was married to a Kohen, so then she's part of the system. She knows already how the Kohen rules. That would be one view of why it mentions that over here, that you can only marry the widow of a Kohen. Again, it's always my, somebody always wants to reach me in the middle of my, there's a discussion why, people get upset. Why can't a Kohen marry a divorcee? There's nothing wrong with a divorced person. The Torah has an example of that people, when a husband divorced a wife was because she was unfaithful to him. That's like the primary grounds for divorce. If somebody is not loyal to the partner, even today, that's sometimes why people get divorced. So, if the woman was unfaithful, or she, then it would be questioned whether a Kohen, who's supposed to be on a higher level and more careful, if he would go then marry a woman who had been unfaithful. And we don't know whether now she's more faithful, or maybe she, who she was unfaithful with, especially what if she had been unfaithful with the Kohen. And there's a suspicion when a woman gets divorced from a man and then they right away marry someone, they might have known that person when they were married, which is not the way it's supposed to be. It's really very problematic if somebody starts a relationship while they're in an existing relationship. So in order to keep that away from the people that were closest to Hashem, Hashem said, Kohanim, you can't have relationships with people that have already had complicated relationships. There are some divorced people who, it's just they didn't get along, there's no problem, they continue on, there's no stigma. We don't have a stigma to the people that are divorced. There are other societies that do. Some of the Christians divorce is like a, but for a Kohen though, we want to keep him away from scandal. A Kohen has to, the clothing of the Kohanim had no pockets, so that there were funds in the Beis Hamikdash. And this way there was no question of them pocketing any of the money on their way out, and the Kohen that went in the basement had to talk to him to make sure he didn't have any money in his mouth when they were very careful that where everything has to be above board, because people of power abuse that power, whether they take money that they shouldn't, whether they do some relationship that they shouldn't, that turns people off to the system. When you have corruption, they're so cynical. You saw what happened in DeKalb. They arrested the sheriff, right? So like, we're in bad shape when the sheriff is it's still so hard. You know, when I grew up, we used to think about president was such a respectful thing. Like it was like, it was considered almost like a holy person, And then, today, first they came out with the news about, what Kennedy was doing and what Nixon was doing and then what Clinton was doing. And now we got Trump. And it's so hard to respect the people in office. And that's not a good thing, where people don't have respect for the offices themselves because of the corruption and the people that have been there. For Kohanim that serve Hashem, it's very important that there be nothing like that goes on. Therefore, they had no pockets to put the money. Therefore, they couldn't be involved in scandal with other people's wives. They couldn't be involved with other relationships. Everything had to be on the up and up, because this was, otherwise people could be turned off. If the Kohanim who are chanced to go do the service, if they weren't doing what they were supposed to, that would not be a good thing. Okay, 23. Now, one of the things the Kohanim would do is they would teach the people right and wrong. 23. The people go to the Kohanim. They had the Sanhedrin in the Beis Hamikdash. So when a person went up for the service, he could find out the laws and the rules. That's Ami Yora, and for my people, verse 23, they will teach Bein Kodesh, what's holy, Bein Kol, what's not, Ubein Tameh, what's impure, what's pure, Yodim. That's the job of the Kohen. Va'al Riv. And it's also important, if people have a fight, we believe in solving fights. In other words, instead of just fighting with people, if you have an argument, so resolve it. Go to the rabbi and figure out who's right, and then life goes on. Val Riv, if people have a dispute between them, you're not allowed to just hate them and argue with them. Hey, you have to go and get justice. Ben Mishmet to Yishmetu, they should be judged according Ves Torasa, according to the laws, Ves Achukosa, and the statutes. And these laws, Bekol Moadei, on all of the holidays, Ishmu, Veshap Susai, and all of we have the holidays and we have the Shabbos. Both Shabbos and Yontif are similar, but they both have their own flavor. So it often talks about Shabbos and Yontif. So that's the time when people would visit the Kohanim. That's the Shabbos and Yontif. Okay. 25. Valmei Sodom Lo Yavo. And they can't come in contact with the dead. That the Kohanim had to stay away from. There are religions that are fixated on the dead. The idols, for some reason, idolatry, they played around with a lot of dead bodies and a lot of dead The other religions, they have their churches on the cemetery. We kept the dead are like separate from the living for us. That's a different phase. We don't our kohanim, they don't they can't even be in the same building with the dead. L'tama ki'im. Now we show a lot of respect for the dead, but and over here normally a kohen couldn't go to a funeral. But they were allowed to go for their direct relatives. And then the relatives are mentioned here. This, by the way, these are in the Parsha. Parsha's Emor this week is the laws for the Kohanim. And so that's why this Haftorah is read. It's because it's similarly a rehash of the laws of the Kohanim. And what's the reason that a Kohen Gadol, like almost never left the Beis HaMikdash, even for a family or for only in very extreme cases, because he was supposed to, the whole Jewish people was his family. He was supposed to be above family, so to speak, in some ways. But a person has his direct relatives that he would make himself impure, his father, his mother, his son, his daughter, his brother, his sister, if his sister wasn't married, if she was married, then her husband would take care of her and would be leading the funeral. But if she was unmarried and still part of the household, then he was allowed to go. 26. V'achrei taroso. Now,
what if the brother was married?
I don't know. I guess I don't know whether the wife would have taken care of it or but it seems like he would. They were tribal. In other words, they stuck with the tribe of the man.
Right.
So they would live, the brothers would be living in the same area and be close, and then if the daughter married to a different tribe, she would be wherever that tribe was. It would, they went by the, these are the ones that are, if there's no one there, that it would be taken care of. But the question is that there, as a short list, this was the list of people whose funerals he would, I shouldn't say you could attend a funeral, you just can't, he wouldn't be a pallbearer. He wouldn't come in direct contact with the body. That's the. If he did, v'acher taroso, he has to purify himself shivas yamin for 7 days. He separately has to count the days of purity, and then after he's been impure, then he goes 27 v'yom bo el kodesh el chatzapnimis. And the day that he would come into the Beis HaMikdosh to serve, he would bring an offering. And there's a question which offering this refers to. Most Kohanim, just like on a bar mitzvah that we celebrate the child's beginning of the mitzvahs, when a Kohen went into the Beis HaMikdosh the first time, he brought a dedication offering. And some people learn that's what this is referring to. Although
it's his sin offering in the English.
Yes, it uses the word sin offering, but some people say we're not familiar with them bringing a sin offering. So they say that's what it refers to. Why would the dedication offering be considered a sin offering? I don't know. Maybe the idea is when you approach Hashem, you have to remove any taint of sin that a person would have. In other words, if a person is going to stand up close in front of Hashem, he has to make sure that he's gotten rid of... We believe that sin like clings to us. In other words, when a person does a crime or does a sin, it's stuck on him. It leaves an impression on him, and he needs... Unless he does teshuvah, it's like dirty clothing. It's like his clothing are dirty. And so a Kohen, when he stands in front of Hashem, you got to purify yourself before you enter. And that's part of that process. V'ayisilehem l'nachla. Now, where's their inheritance? Where's their, most Jews, they got big farms, they got vineyards, they got oil, they got... olive trees, they got all kinds of pomegranates, all kinds of good things. So Hashem says, I'm their inheritance. V'haysa lehem l'nachla. And this is their inheritance. Ani nachlasam, I am their inheritance. It's an interesting inheritance, right? In other words, Hashem, they take care of me, I'm going to take care of them. Most people, they got to worry about the business, the farm, they got to plow, they got to plant, they need rain, they need, the Kohanim Hashem says, they serve me and I'm going to take care of them. I'm going to make sure their needs are met. But don't give them a land, don't put them in the business, because they're supposed to be in the spiritual business. Today, I mean, we, we still have this system to some extent. In other words, the people that dedicate their lives to Hashem, only Hashem knows how they manage, how they make a living. Like, it's just if you're busy teaching and giving your life to others, and you have other people that are spending their whole life just trying to make a living. So how does it work that if you're trying to help others, that you manage? The answer is you take care of others, then Hashem takes care of you. That's always the rule. So that's what he says for Kohanim. B'chuz lo titin l'Yisrael. Don't give them you might think, all right, let's take care of the Kohanim. I'll give them a nice farm. I'll put them in the business. Hashem says, don't do it. That's not the role of the Kohen. Even if you want to settle them all down, give them work to do, they are in my service. It's an interesting Rambam. The Rambam says that when the Beis HaMikdash stood, so only the Kohanim did the direct service of Hashem. They would go up to Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, and they had their weeks when they were doing their job. He said today, it's free. Anybody that wants to can be like a Kohen. In other words, today, we don't have... In other words, individuals can decide, you know what, I don't want to be involved in the mundane world of, just eating for bread. I want to dedicate myself to Hashem. I want to be like a Kohen. Hashem says you could... the Rambam says you could do it. You could turn yourself into a Kohen today. You could accept that job for yourself, that I want to dedicate my life to Hashem, where I'm going to be, pursuing holy things.
Doesn't the Nazir do that?
The Nazir does that also. That's a form of that. The Nazir abstains. That's a very unique kind of thing. He doesn't drink wine. He doesn't participate in certain things. The Kohen is a little different. He does a lot of divine service, a lot of connectivity. Verse 29. Now, there are a whole bunch of different kinds of offerings. Each one has, so to speak, a different flavor. You got the gift offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering. Hey, mi yochu, they get to eat them. Achochem b'Yisrael lehem. And there were certain donations that were brought to them. 30. Reishis kol b'chori, that people would bring the first fruits, the kol truma, and then they would get the tithe, kol mikot. These were the gifts to the Kohanim. Yeah. V'reishis arusisechem, the first dough. This, by the way, is challah. What confuses people is that the name challah is a type of bread that we like to eat, which is called challah. But also the word challah in the Torah means a piece of the dough that was separated for the Kohen. So you take challah from rye bread. Guess what? You take challah from cookies. If you make 5 pounds of cookies, you take challah from cookies. You take challah from... the caterers, where they make a lot, big batches. The reason most of the time nobody makes a batch of 5 pounds of, cookie dough. That's huge. But if you would, you would take the piece that would go to support the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash and to make the blessing on challah. So what confuses people is that, what do you mean? I take it's cookies, it's not challah, or it's rye bread, it's not challah bread. But we started to call the main bread that we made for, not everybody bakes bread every day, but for Shabbos, in honor of Shabbos, that's when people bake bread. And the bread that we eat on Shabbos typically is challah. Unless you really don't like challah, then you make some other kind of bread. But it became pretty much a universal custom to have challah on Shabbos. So we started calling that particular type of bread challah, but really any bread has challah. The word challah just means the part that you separate. So the first piece of the dough, before we eat it, we realize that our bread comes from Hashem. When we separate and think of others and think of the Kohanim, we separate the piece. Titnu l'Kohen, you give it to the Kohen. And when you do that, leniyah bracha el beisach, that brings a blessing into the house. Now here's a strange statement. And by the way, we finish off with that. It's also strange. The 31, the Kohanim shouldn't eat treif. Now, I would like to think that they would know not to eat treif, especially they're so holy and they're doing such good things. Kol nevei l'treifa, any carcass or torn thing, min ha'of, min ha'behema, lo yochel kohanim. Kohanim, by the way, you're so holy and you're so special, but don't eat any non-kosher, any torn in. Why is it saying that?
They're human.
They're human, yeah. It's a funny place. There's one answer that I saw. There's one or two of the types of offerings were slaughtered in a way that would be non-kosher if they were out of the temple. There's a bird offering where the Kohen did it with his fingernail. It's not kosher to do. You can't. It's not. You know. It was kosher, so to speak, for that service. But if you were to do that outside the temple on a chicken or something, that would never be kosher. So you might have thought that since when a Kohen eats, his eating is like holy eating, and they have a whole different way of slaughter and a whole. So he's coming to say, no. This is in the Beis HaMikdash. This is in the Beis HaMikdash had different rules. The Beis HaMikdash was like in a different place, in a different time zone. It was such an experience that people went into the Beis HaMikdash one way, and if you met them after they'd been there, they were a changed person. It was really like a totally new experience. Today, people, they have to go to therapy to get to deal with issues that they had for years. Like if they had things that were bothering them and phobias, and they have to have counseling. And it's not easy to deal with like things in the past. If a person had sinned and had different issues, he could go to the Beis HaMikdash and walk out a new person. Totally clean, totally new. We don't, you know, again, this was part of the magic, so to speak, of going to the Beis HaMikdash and that experience. So the Kohanim were in the Beis HaMikdash. It was a different dimension of space, one that we don't have today. We can't totally relate to it because we don't have it. But they went there, so maybe the rules were somewhat suspended. In fact, the Torah emphasized, you know, the Beis HaMikdash was open on Shabbos. And they were cooking on Shabbos too. The fires were going. So it was like a totally different dimension. They didn't keep Shabbos. They didn't keep Kashrut. Like, it ate on Yom Kippur. Hashem, you know, there was food on Yom Kippur. And, you know, meaning the offerings went on Yom Kippur. So it really was like a spiritual place. It was not part of this world, the Beis HaMikdash. So if you're not part of this world, maybe the rules are a little different. So the Kohanim have that challenge that when they're in the Beis HaMikdash, they're like angels and they're doing the divine service, but then they come back to this world and all the rules apply. And so that's kind of why in the end it finishes off. Even though they're doing whatever those rules are, kol nevei l'treifa mina'o, whatever it is, they have to be careful. Lo yochol Kohanim, the Kohanim, the rules apply to them just as much. To some extent, great rulers and leaders sometimes think the rules are not for them. I can have a private server, right? That doesn't apply to me. I'm, you know, or the whatever that is. In other words, the rules are for other people. They're not for the the people in Congress. They have good health care. They don't have to have the health care that all of us have. Because so therefore, with the Torah constantly emphasizes that we don't have different castes or different system or holier than thou. You know, the Kohen, the rules apply to him. Whatever he ate in the Beis HaMikdash, when you come out of the Beis HaMikdash, you have the same rules as everybody else. You got to be careful with the laws of Kashrus and the same. But there are probably deeper meanings as well. This is, all the prophets are somewhat mystical. And so that's it's open to try to figure out why they mention what they do. This is listed overall because you have all this Kohen information, all these thoughts about the connectivity to Hashem and the closeness to Hashem and the role that it plays. But like I said, the Rambam though is so interesting that he says man or woman today could be a Kohen if you want to, and it doesn't have to be your whole life. A person at different times can decide, you know what? I need to be really spiritual. I'm gonna take a week. I'm gonna take a month. I'm gonna take one day a month. I'm gonna dedicate myself at this time and connect to Hashem or help others or do certain things. And a person might say, well, who are you to do X, Y, Z? Well, the Torah allows us to dedicate parts of our lives to Hashem and to doing the service, to being that those moments when we go in, so to speak. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash we go in, but we should set aside times when we feel that we're doing the job, whether we're signing up for whatever that may be to connect to Hashem.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.